You're listening to Supervision with a Vision, where we discuss all things supervision. I'm your host, Sarah, professional counselor, marriage and family therapist, play therapist, eating disorder specialist, and cookie lover, with my co-host, Heather, marriage and family therapist, certified Together in Texas counselor, a Texas transplant from California, and outdoor adventurer. Hi, welcome to Supervision with a Vision. Today, Heather and I are talking about the gap in mental health services. This week, we read A Closer Look at the Mental Health Provider Shortage, published in Counseling Today 2023.
I think that as we go through all of our topics for today, one of the things that is interesting is I think all of us have experienced this rush of having too many clients or not in, like, I can't fit them all in. And we've also experienced times where we're like, oh, I have some space in my schedule. But are we finding the clients that need the help? I mean, that's an interesting beginning part. But I think our first topic is limited resources.
Okay. And so what's limited? What are we talking about?
I think, like, globally speaking, or just within our country, mental health is not necessarily, it does not have a big earmark for budgets that hit, whether it's at the state level or the federal level, wherever.
It's not financially prioritized?
Correct.
Okay. So in situations where it is available, like you and I talked about school counseling.
Right.
That and kind of compared actually to a school situation that our government prioritizes education. And so it's available to kids without cost. But counseling's it is, but it's pretty limited. So in the United States, in a school that has kids, what, maybe if we said fifth or sixth grade and under, so an elementary school. And so those kids are like, 11, 12 and under.
Yep.
And that it might, how many kids are in the elementary school your kids go to?
720.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yep. About 700. And how many school counselors does the school have?
We just got approved for a second one because we went over 700.
Right. So, well, I mean, then limited financially because there was a limit in how many counselors you could hire, but then it means that there's a limit in how many hours.
Correct.
They
are available.
Right. So that if, you know, 40 divided by just under 700.
Right. I mean, how is that going to really work?
Right. Then we're not really prioritizing mental health or providing it in a way that would have a very big impact,
right,
at least at school.
At least in the school setting, right.
Right. But you and I thought of that as one example, but certainly there are others that in hospital settings or the community setting that there's just not nearly enough funding to make mental health services available to the number of people that they're trying to serve.
Right. They can't serve the population as a whole. And then also looking at, we can't get the, like sometimes you're limited, right? Even if you have insurance, even if you have a great situation, you're then limited to, you know.
Well, the other examples we thought of were EAP programs, which stands for Employee Assistance Program. So if in the United States, if you work for a company that a large enough company, so not a tiny one, but a company that I think it's 10 or 12 employees or more, then they're required by the federal government to offer an employee assistance program, which includes mental health services, but it's really limited. So it's just six sessions, I think, in a year.
Right.
Or it might be six sessions per situation, which is a little tricky.
And I think some of them are different, right? Every program is written a little different.
So. And then also, I don't know if we said this out loud or if I just thought of it. In the university setting, universities are required to give students a certain amount of counseling, but that's also very limited.
Right.
So similar to an EAP, if a student has a concern, I think that they can access six sessions per school year per situation.
Right.
So their parents get divorced, six sessions.
Right.
They, you know,
go through a breakup.
Right. Six sessions, something like that. So, but still pretty limited. So if this is, if counseling is something that you're needing or wanting long term, an EAP or a university setting isn't the place where you could get that.
Right.
And a school, like an elementary or primary school, is also not the place where you're going to get that type of mental health support.
Right.
So it's limited resources. Heather, the next point was mental health providers don't make enough money.
Right. Straight across the board. I think especially when you look at like what reimbursement rates are, if you do work at an agency or if you work in insurance things, you're going to make less than if you are private pay. Not always, but there is that gap again of.
I think to me, if I look at all people who provide mental health and, you know, the average income, the amount of time and energy and money we put into becoming credentialed.
Oh, absolutely.
Doesn't make up for the amount of money we end up making in our career.
Right.
So, you and I also talked about that in the United States, it's now standard that a counselor at a master's degree level, the master's level programs for counselors are 60 credit hours.
Right.
Which is long.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's more than a lot of other masters.
Right. A lot. I mean, I don't know. What is an MBA? Maybe like 25.
Oh, I think it might be closer to 30, but.
Okay. 30.
Yeah.
But half as many.
Right. I mean, that's.
So half huge. As much money.
Right.
And half as much time.
Correct.
And then, I don't know, as you're supervising people, how many of your supervisees know that when they finish school, they've got at least 18 months of being provisionally licensed?
Right.
They probably will end up paying for supervision during that time. And while they're provisionally licensed, they probably will not make the full amount of money that they can make their income is definitely limited.
Right. I actually just interviewed a new supervisee recently, or rather she interviewed me.
Uh-huh.
And we were talking and she asked about my rate or she didn't even think there was a rate for supervision. And so I clarified because she never asked.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I needed to like put it out there.
Sure.
And she was shocked and needed to think about that. And it took her about 2 weeks and she got back to me. She said, okay, I reworked the numbers. This is what I can pay per month. Is that how much I'll be paying? I mean, she needed the number locked in. It was like, this is what I need to know. I'll be paying you, you know.
So, I mean, on a tight enough fixed budget that it was important to her that she knew exactly how much she would be spending.
Right. Ahead of time.
Yeah. I mean, but that makes so much sense that she didn't know, because in school, it's absolutely not expected that you're paying for supervision, because you're paying for school. You do not, the university does not.
That. Right.
Right. They don't expect you to pay. So. Right. That's totally an unexpected expense for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you just got out of school. You're probably owing some money for having been in school.
Mm-hmm.
And now you need to pay more money to reach this goal and be able to make the full, you know, your full income potential. And you don't get to do that right away.
Right.
So I think those are challenges too. I mean, then what kind of salary does meet the needs of people who are trying to do this if they've got student loans, other expenses included in trying to get their license, maintain their license, then we're not paying them enough.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Coaching Conversation 2024. This podcast is 100% dedicated to leadership and leadership within the workplace coaching area. We work with companies throughout the world teaching leaders how to coach their employees. This podcast is dedicated to teaching specific strategies, frameworks, coaching models, and now artificial intelligence strategies to help leaders drive greater teamwork, collaboration, cooperation, greater attitudes, better motivation, coaching career development, just to name a few. I hope you'll check out our podcast.
And then you've got people that just get in that spiral of like not ever being able to quite get like above water. If they're paying for their loan and they're paying for supervision, and then they finally launch into the world and think that like now they can charge a little bit more per client.
Right.
It's like, does that even really reach the.
I think it's been a while now, so the numbers have changed, but not dramatically. I think the last time I taught like an internship section where the students were graduating and finishing, and I wanted to know, but the university wanted to know what their plans were, what they would be doing after graduating. And there were a lot of them that once they realized what they would be making right out of school, were really struggling to decide if they would continue as counselors.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What do you think? What are alternatives to someone who's got a counseling degree, but realizing the cost to be fully licensed or maintain it is just too big or too much, and they don't want to make the amount of money that a counselor would make. Right. What do you think they could do instead?
I know of actually one situation like that, and she immediately jumped into human resources.
Oh.
And it was a good fit for her because it was a lot of still problem solving and different things like that. That worked out very well for her. She still works in human resources like a decade later, and she's super happy about it. But she obtained great skills to be able to kind of like negotiate between employers and employees for what needed to happen.
Right.
But nowadays, that's a whole, there actually is a category that's being more and more developed for human resources with the masters in organizational development and all of that. It's like now there's even that spinoff. So it might be hard to attain those jobs with just a counseling degree.
Yeah. We didn't even talk about this, but the average salary of a university professor in a counseling department is worse, is lower
than a
mental health. Right. So out of school, a handful of years, maybe 5 to 7 years out of school, you're probably making more than your professors were.
Right. That there's, our system is very, very, very messed up.
So mental health professionals are not making enough money. And our next point was, then we quit.
Right.
But we did, you and I did say that, certainly that is a definite reason that people are quitting. But what are some other reasons that mental health professionals might get into the profession and then quit?
I think it can be anything and everything from their own stuff gets triggered if they haven't done
any
work.
Yes.
Like they're like, okay, this is too much. I can't do this. Forget it. Mm-hmm. I think if, you know, some people can go through a counseling program and get great grades and just not be a people person. And if,
right.
You know,
so the natural skill that you can't teach some people.
They just flounder and then it's not for them because they don't like that.
Mm-hmm. How many people have you known, maybe in school or once you're supervising them, that they weren't a natural fit for counseling and they did ultimately quit?
I don't know that I've known it too many of them. It seems like I get a lot of stories from my supervisees that are like, my friend from school gave up.
Well, that's really encouraging, actually, I think. That so the gatekeeping involved or that should be happening at schools is sometimes happening in schools.
Right.
That either the student realizes this is not a good fit for me or the university helps them to see this is not a good fit.
And then I've had other, just know of other situations where people are really great counselors, maybe in a very specific geared area. The one I'm thinking of right now is one of our local agencies that does strictly CBT work, and it's workshop based, and it's like, here's, you're in week two and here's your curriculum. And that's a very different kind of counseling.
Yes.
But again, I don't know that you're going to make any more money doing that. I think it's just a fit thing. Yeah. I would guess, I mean, me as a person, I would get burnt out on that so fast. It would just
different personality though.
Exactly.
I mean, there might be somebody who thinks this is heaven.
Right.
I
it's
just
so
love
easy. I just show up
of,
and I give these things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think part of my reason behind the even doing the podcast is that I think people quit when they feel unsupported and disconnected.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And supervision gives that to us.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, you and I have talked about it probably not while we're being recorded, that marriage and family therapists and professional counselors really emphasize the value of supervision, but not all mental health professionals do.
Right.
I think that that is one of the strengths of counseling and therapists, the profession of therapists, is that we do emphasize that. I think it helps maintain people.
Right. And it gives you all that networking and all the different places to go like, oh, my supervisor didn't know who I should talk to about play therapy, but he had someone in his pocket that was like, hey, you need to call this person and talk, you know, and there was different things to talk about.
Yeah.
So,
a point we didn't make, which I think also is why it's so important to be connected, is we deal with difficult things. We deal with big topics.
Right.
And I think it's especially hard if you feel disconnected or alone when that's what you hear and what you're doing each day without having camaraderie.
Correct. I think that's so, so important. I have an ongoing joke with my husband because he works in the world of finance, and I know that his work is hard and he does big things and helps mm-hmm, people all day mm-hmm. long, but it is such a different kind of help.
Yes.
That when he's like, oh, this person today complained about this and this, and I just laugh because I'm like, oh, okay. Like, that's the level of, like, engagement yeah. he had.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm not even going to discuss what I just did for the last four hours. Yes. You know? Like,
yeah. Yeah. That it's certainly his job is stressful. But
right.
In a different way. Yes. Stressful in a different way. So with lack of support, lack of interaction with other people, this is a hard job to maintain for a long time.
Right.
To keep, not just to start, but to continue to work at. So as a profession, we quit.
Right. One, I think this is one of the professions, and I know the medical field's also this way, but mm-hmm. there's not a lot of other professions that, man, you have to stay on your game. Like, things yeah. change overnight.
Yeah.
You have to be current with whatever's happening. You have to be mm-hmm. very aware to the world around you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot that goes into our job that isn't just in the room counseling
uh-huh.
people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. So on top of all of those challenges, there is an overwhelming increase in need right now.
Our world is broken.
Yeah. Could you attribute the increase in need to a couple of things, or it's many, many things?
Well, I think it's many things, but I will say, so we went from a place in mental health where, like, it was shameful and people didn't talk about it
mm-hmm.
to it's okay to have a counselor. It's good for uh-huh. you. Like uh-huh. that, which is a great, I mean, that is a positive thing,
uh-huh.
but with that, just that shift came the need for more counselors.
Oh,
because
yes.
you all of a sudden so, made it okay.
Destigmatizing.
Right.
Making it more acceptable. More accessible.
Right. Which
means that we've increased the need.
Right. And theoretically, that's been over like a decade, right?
Sure. It's a long time coming. Right.
But then you take on all the social things that have happened in the United States climate. And really, it could go across any state, right? We could mm-hmm. talk about any particular state having their crisis moments or their issues. And I think you throw COVID on top of that. It was mm-hmm. the great magnifier of problems that were already existing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think lots of things, people got to their breaking point.
Yeah. I think, to me, as you were saying that, I thought those feel things are not completely specific to the United States, but feel pretty specific to the United States. The way that COVID impacted us, and also really doesn't matter what side of the line you're on, the dynamics of our politics are right. divisive and mm-hmm. stressful.
Right.
And so those two things. What about overexposure?
Oh,
okay. That feels global.
That feels global.
That yeah. Overexposure to media, news, mm-hmm. each other.
Right. Just can't possibly process all of the mm-hmm. things you're taking in.
Mm-hmm. And then it's just continuous.
Right. And then throw in just a normal, like, relationship blip, and all of a sudden right. it's more.
Like, can you imagine if you had been a teenager with a cell phone that had the internet?
I know. Like, wow.
Just constant. I mean, I don't like it when my right. phone gives me little notifications, the news thing that
oh,
happens
yeah.
on.
Right.
I wish I knew how to turn that off. I should turn it off today. Where you just get that.
Right. You're like, stop. I didn't want to know.
Right. Right. Whatever the breaking news mm-hmm. is, you get that a little beep on your phone. Mm-hmm. I hate that.
Right.
Especially if I'm, you know, doing something and I'm not looking at my phone.
And then it gets
so
your attention.
Right. Yes. I'm like, oh, there's a
right.
wildfire somewhere.
And right.
It's just, yeah. But I know how to manage that a little bit better than the 12-year-old that just got a new phone.
Right. It's like super obsessed with being able yeah. to do their own thing on their own device. And yeah, mm-hmm. it's scary.
Any other, so politics, natural disasters, I would include COVID,
mm-hmm.
Overexposure, destigmatization of mental health. You think of other things that have increased the need in mental health?
I think it's also yes, we've made it okay or good to have.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit. But I think we've also made it in some circles, like, knowing what your label is gives you an identity. It's yeah. almost like done. We almost did. We went too far with uh-huh. that. Uh-huh. Like, yes, be aware of your mental health. And then the next step in some circles is like,
yeah.
here's my list of labels. This is what I am.
Right. Then everyone has a right. mental health concern.
Right.
That is tricky. I mean, it's we wanted to rock the boat
mm-hmm.
and destigmatize mental health.
Right.
But then is it possible for it to go too far?
Right.
I don't know.
I can give you an example of teenagers talking, and I'm covering it up. I have my own teenager. But recently I heard two teenagers, or I heard a mom and a teenager talking, and the mom said, "Oh, I really like Susie. She's so, you know, she's such a positive influence." And the kid responded with, "Well, yeah, she goes to therapy." Like, so that's great, right? Like, you're like, oh, how refreshing.
Yeah.
But like, that's a qualifying factor of like, that now makes that the kid's good because they go to therapy. It then pushes that like need over the top.
Yeah. I don't know. Like it, like it's like a fad or the right pair of shoes or the thing. Like, yeah.
What therapist do you see? where's your office?
Right. I do think, I mean, and maybe I have felt like that has something to do with where my office is, but I see kids that they will sometimes say, I mean, I like to the, a friend, oh, I can't do that today. Have therapy.
Right.
And you're right. No one blinks, you know, no one bats an eye because that kid has therapy. The other kid has therapy on a different day. Yeah. So I don't know what, I think it, we're in a funny place of stigmatizing mental health and destigmatizing mental health.
It's very polarizing.
The last point in our article is we're old.
Yeah.
So in relationship, why is there a gap in mental health services? Because we're old. I think that goes back to quitting and we're not making enough money that if people are quitting and they're not making enough money, or this is a difficult profession to be in long term, and that so fewer people are entering the field of mental health, and then as a group, we're all getting older, then there are going to be people that are leaving the field, not because, not just because there's not enough money in it or it's difficult, but because they're getting closer to retirement age.
Right. And I think that's a huge piece of it. Is we're not bringing in the amount of people.
So if for every year, this is how many leave the field, there's not an equal or greater number of people entering the field.
Yeah. And we've kind of almost harmed ourselves by making it so different, right? Like, so all the different mental health providers that are there, not all of them are licensed mental health providers. Some of them are just like providers. And if you don't get the right one in the course of, I mean, this could be a whole other podcast, but if you're just seeing somebody that maybe isn't the right fit and you're bouncing around, well, that person maybe isn't there when you call them back 3 years later, right? Like they've retired and moved on, and then you're starting your process all over.
I do. One thought I had about the idea that as a profession, we're getting older. I don't know if, I mean, you, when you worked with insurance, if you ever noticed this or this affected you, with the area that my office is in limited insurance insurance companies limited and now they've wised up, they're getting with it now. Insurance companies were limiting the number of providers in certain areas because they felt like it was oversaturated, but they also weren't keeping up their database, and so they weren't keeping track of how many of those people had retired or quit practicing. So there might be an oversaturation according to their database, but actually there weren't enough providers in the area because as they were getting older, they were not getting taken off the list.
And it was, I mean, that even the notion that there would be a limited number per zip code per insurance is silly. My office changed probably 7 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't remember, but we changed counties. Guess what? All of a sudden you could get into like every insurance thing because you switched county. And I'm like, that's just a little bit ridiculous that it's that, you know, and here in Texas, counties are small. In other, in other parts of the United States, counties are very big.
It's a complicated system. So
the system behind the system,
the way it was being used and complicated to update it and actually make it work and fit for each area. But one of the issues with that was that as the group, as a group, mental health providers were getting older and retiring, and the other systems involved weren't keeping up.
We just didn't, that was like an old system. I'm not going to look at it.
So there's a lot of things that need attention or could use some work here.
Absolutely.
Maybe, I mean, I feel like I'm kind of bummed out. maybe we could think of something that at our level as practitioners, What is it that we are capable of doing that makes an impact in this?
Yeah. I mean, I think that needs to be thought about longer. I don't know that I have anything off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Maybe something to think about.
Right.
Well, we would love to hear ways that you think that you might make an impact on some of these issues. And as always, we'd love to hear your suggestions for future topics. And thanks today for listening to Supervision with a Vision.